the feature address delivered at the United Nations General Assembly to launch the International Decade for People of African Descent, 10th December 2014, delivered by Professor Sir Hilary Beckles, the University of the West Indies.
His Excellency Mr. Sam Kutesa, Distinguished President of this United Nations General Assembly, Excellencies of the United Nations, colleagues of the Working Group of Experts on People of African Descent, distinguished members of the General Assembly, colleagues of civil society, distinguished ladies and gentlemen. What a beautiful moment we are invited to share by the distinguished president this afternoon in this august chamber of the United Nations. What a seminal season it is for women and men of serious disposition to step up and move forward to shape humanity's future in a fashion consistent with its finest values. Critically, we are assembled here in this world forum to choose. We are at the crossroads, and we seek the guidance of Legba, Africa's God of the intersection, to provide the spiritual content of our choice. The importance of this understanding should not be in any way minimized. Once again, at the dawn of this 21st century, humanity struggles to come to terms with the legacies of the crimes committed against its African family. Aspects of these legacies are as alive today as they were two centuries ago. Everywhere that African enchainment and enslavement became the basis of societies and economies, their descendants today cannot assume the human right to breathe the air of freedom and life. Plantation drivers and overseers have been replaced by public prosecutors and militarized police. The human right to life, denied Africans during the 400 years of this barbarity we call chattel slavery, continues to be contested. The racism that informs that contestation defines and distorts the primary social relations of humanity. In 1781, the English law lord, Judge Mansfield, in an effort to purge African enslavement from his homeland and to confine its vulgarities to the colonies, insisted that his country folks at home should breathe neither the foul air of slavery nor endure the stench of its stain. Today, 233 years later, millions of African descendants are still breathing the foul air that blows from the stench of slavery. In their quest to inhale the free air of justice and democracy, they are seized by the throat and their breath taken away in a fashion reminiscent of centuries ago. "I cannot breathe" has now become the global mantra of a multitude brutally policed in their pursuit of social justice, economic enfranchisement, and existential dignity. No longer do we have to watch the construction in movies of the destruction of black life, nor journey to the journals and archives to see the deadly mentality bred in slavery, legally at work, officially sanctioned in triumphant celebration. We see it in our streets as we go about our daily business. We cry for the victims of these crimes. We cry out for the descent of humanity deeper and deeper into the despair of the dungeon that is the legacy of African enslavement, the greatest crime against it in and before modernity. It has been the steadfast refusal by the beneficiaries of these crimes to formally recognize their nature and nurture. It is this refusal of recognition that drives their legacies into our children's lives and facilitates conversations of extermination in our communities. The denial stands undiminished in the face of a mountain of evidence that cries out for ownership, responsibility, and accountability. Denial and silence are now the mother and father of a new generation of hate crimes squeezing black life from already impaired lungs. Denial and silence are today breathtakers as hate and greed were at an earlier time. The names on the stone face of silence and denial, however, must be known and called to account. Portugal denies its slavery crimes, yet we know that it was the largest shipper of enchained African bodies across the Atlantic. To Portugal, we say, rise to your responsibility. Great Britain denies, yet we know it was the greatest profit maximizer and multifarious investor in slavery. To Great Britain, we say, rise to your responsibility. France denies, yet we know that it fought the bloodiest war of all to prevent blacks from breathing the air of liberty, fraternity, and freedom, leaving Haiti, the symbol of anti-slavery, resilient, respected, but covered in the ash of French retribution. To France, we say, rise to your responsibility. The Dutch denies, yet we know that they were first to develop the trade in enchained African bodies as a modern global corporate enterprise. To the Dutch, we say, rise to your responsibility. Spain denies, yet we know that it was Spain who first conceptualized and practiced the idea that African enslavement should follow the genocide it imposed upon the natives of these Americas. To Spain, we say, rise to your responsibility. Norway and Denmark, not to be left behind, joined in and prospered, as did the royals of Russia and the aristocracy of Austria, who were the slavery role models for the Swiss and the Swedes. To all of them, we say, rise to your responsibility. All of Western Europe combined to create the cradle of a commercial upsurgence based upon the most lucrative, sustainable investment of all times, the enchained, enslaved African body as commercial property. The silence of the Anglo-Saxon and their allies must be broken and denials ended. Then and only then will African descendants breathe freely the air of their ascendants. Mr. President, I wish on behalf of the forward-looking world to express gratitude to this noble and life-empowering institution, the United Nations General Assembly, for its wisdom in finding a way to declare this decade in recognition of African descendant peoples. Mr. President, members, we thank you. We thank also all those advocates and champions of this cause, those who constituted the working group, our diplomats especially, for bringing us to this moment. Mrs. Fanon, Professor Shepherd, and Ambassador Rhonda King are entitled to our special recognition. We thank also our colleagues at UNESCO who have worked without rest to ensure that the Slave Roots Project and the general history of Africa stay alive despite life-threatening budget cuts. These are the two programs that have made an enormous impact and difference. I celebrate the efforts of Madame Irina Bokova, UNESCO's leader, and urged that she continues to find ways to ensure that these projects remain as UNESCO flagships during the decade of African descendants people. UNESCO has determined that the 9th volume of the General History of Africa should be published in 3 monographs dedicated to the study of African descendants and should carry the title Global Africa. Going forward, the African descendant peoples of Asia, the Middle East, the Pacific, and Latin America especially will have a voice and a venue to express their vision. This decade will provide these millions of descendants, hitherto silenced and buried in denial, with opportunities to rise without shame and guilt, to claim their identities without fear of reprisals. To offer these hitherto invisible people an opportunity of enlightenment must be a major goal of this decade. In this regard, I wish to invite you to celebrate the government of Brazil for its enlightened policy that African history must be taught at all levels of the educational system, from the primary to the tertiary. This policy should be emulated by all countries that have built their economies and societies upon African labor and intellect. The transglobal slave trade was more than a movement of enchained African bodies. It was a transfer of African cosmologies, ontologies, and epistemologies to slaving societies that were enriched by African minds and hands. The violent recruitment of enchained bodies enabled the reaping of intellectual and cultural resources that gave rise to the West as a recipient of Africa's best. In this decade, resources must therefore be provided to NGOs, universities, and museums to research and discuss these traditions of labor and intellectual exploitation and to illustrate the true role of the African in the making of modernity. Finally, there is the imperative of reparatory justice. Dr. Martin Luther King, in his iconic I Have a Dream speech, said the following: "We have come to our nation's capital to cash a check. America has given the Negro people a bad check, which has come back marked insufficient funds. Mr. President, we have been taught to rehearse and recall the dream part of this powerful message to modernity. And likewise, we have been urged to forget and to ignore the reparatory justice aspect of that fine speech. Today, I call upon the world to take notice that Dr. King's reparatory justice claim is as alive as the power of his dream. This 21st century will be the century in which the world will be called upon to atone with reparatory justice for the crimes whose legacies continue to cripple and squeeze the air from our lungs. It took all of the 17th and 18th centuries to establish and globalize these crimes of enchainment and enslavement. It took all of the 19th century, from Toussaint Louverture's Haiti in the 1790s to Abraham Lincoln's United States of America in the 1860s to Brazil in the 1880s to uproot the barbarity called chattel slavery from the modern world. It then took all of the 20th century for African descendants to convert their legal freedom into citizenship and institutional participation, gains continually threatened by forces still rooted in slavery's enduring legacies. Now, if it will take all of the 21st century to achieve reparatory justice, we shall not retreat, but will mobilize in this decade to begin once again to move speedily along the journey to reparatory justice. Our finest and treasured values, peace, justice, respect, and reconciliation, will require that we attain reparatory justice. It will be the basis, the only sustainable foundation upon which this 21st century humanity will be rebuilt in a world dedicated to peace and prosperity for all. The CARICOM nations, ancestral homes to the world's first complete slave economies, have established national and regional commissions in order to engage the nations of Europe, the owners and operators of these slave economies, in a diplomatic dialogue designed to rebuild trust and respect within the framework of reparatory justice. CARICOM has endorsed a 10-point action plan for reparatory justice submitted by its commission. This plan calls for reparatory justice around issues such as healthcare, education, cultural institutions, food security, and critically, a formal apology as well as debt cancellation. It is a plan which says that the legacies of slavery and the enduring elements of colonization constitute the greatest single drag upon the development efforts of citizens. It calls upon the nations of Europe to return to the scenes of these crimes and to participate in remedial developmental work that will enable African descendants to free themselves of the cultural and economic shackles that remain in place after the formalities of emancipation. This is the only path that can lead to an end of the shame and guilt that result from silence and denial. We urge all countries to establish national reparations commissions. We intend that this decade will see these national commissions coming together as a global commission for reparatory justice. The war against terror has been fought by reparations advocates for 200 years. They continue to experience the terrorism of intimidation. Black nations and civil society organizations have been threatened for supporting reparatory justice programs. Here in this United Nations, agencies are denied funding for supporting projects that are reparatory of these legacies. The hypocrisy of open mouth lip service and funds removal is the strategy of subversion we have all come to experience. The financial power of rich countries built upon slavery is used to intimidate and punish black nations into silence. This strategy, this attitude of anger, is not sustainable in this, our 21st century. Black nations cannot breathe as a result. But they must find a way to say no more, and to say it in here in this United Nations. They too must be allowed to breathe the air of equality and freedom with justice. In the name of Toussaint Louverture, Nelson Mandela, Harriet Tubman, Malcolm X, Dr. King, and Maya Angelou, let us all say in this decade, the demand for reparatory justice will be taken through every diplomatic door or down the corridors of every court. We are survivors of the African Holocaust, and these Americas were dragged some 12 million of our enchained ancestors. At the end of slavery, only 6 million had survived. Survivors have a right to reparatory justice. The powerful nations have no right to deprive them of reparatory justice. Let us all raise our hands, as they have done in the streets of this city, in opposition to the violence that denies us the right to breathe and to have justice. Let us all resolve to make decent this decade as the door to a century that must witness the triumph of our collective and shared conception of humanity at its best. Let us all resolve to clean up the mess left behind by slavery and colonization and move on in peace and with love. Mr. President, be assured of my respect, cooperation, and gratitude. Your generosity is acknowledged, and I thank you for your gracious enduring of my intervention in your General Assembly. I thank you.